Hello everybody, it's me Roscoe and welcome to the latest episode of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. And yep, it is me in the throne once again. Heafy has gone into a quiet room to shout and just say loads of bad words because Town made up three defeats in a row. But don't worry, I'm joined by two fine gentlemen in Stuart Watson, Alex Jones, who are normally my carers when I host. They make sure I stay on the same line. Don't go anywhere crazy. Let's bring in Stuart Watson, first of all. How are you, mate?
Yeah, not just your carer in pod, also out of pod sometimes as well, yeah. Whether it be getting you from A to B or just generally looking out for your well-being. We try to look after you, mate. How are you, okay?
Yeah, all good. After yesterday, you know, you just went to sleep, woke up, and then, I knew I had to talk about it. So here we are, my friend. This is our little nice counselling session. For listeners and ourselves to run through the game and all that sort of stuff. Alex Jones, come in, my friends. Mm-hmm. Good to see you as always yesterday, but how are you today?
I don't know. I'm all right, I guess. Yeah, some nice post-match therapy for us to get through today. But overall moods, I don't really know, to be perfectly honest. I think this is one of those where... I don't think there have been that many, but coming onto a podcast, I'm not really sure how to kind of formulate my thoughts and feelings and emotions and stuff like that. We'll give it a go and hopefully it will come out not too jumbled and mixed up.
Yeah, I'll try my best to host this in a way where it all goes smoothly, but you never know what will happen. But you guys do a great job. If people listen, if you never watch Stu and Alex's video verdict after games, like that's great work they do because... obviously, that is very raw. They've just been speaking to McKenna, speaking to a player, and then like now I've got to record this video. Just the last thing they do and try to think of things to say and member and stuff like that. It's good work. So I always, when I'm filming that, I'm like, yeah, good stuff. So obviously, you've had time to sleep and reflect. Obviously, Stu, you put together a very good, Stu says, as always. Where do you want to start, boys? Shall we hear from Kieran McKenna or shall we get stuck in with our own thoughts, first of all?
I don't mind. Should we have a little listen to Kieran?
Yeah. That's K-Dog, what you got to say? Stu, you asked him a question. Let's see what he had to say.
Obviously, a disappointing end so close to that first home win. Give us your verdict. Give us your thoughts, please.
Yeah, of course. It's a devastated dressing room today. I thought there were so many good things in the game, so many good things in the performance. Commitment levels were outstanding. Some of our play was really, really good right up until the point of their first goal, really. It's a really disappointing group because we felt like we deserved to take the lead. Felt like we had a second goal that was harshly overruled, to be honest. Felt like we had chances in the second half. It was always going to be a difficult second half, especially with the quality of the subs that they're bringing on. But felt like we defended well. We had chances to get the second goal. And on 86 minutes, I think we were in... as much control of the game as you can be at 1-0, to be honest, against a team of that level. There wasn't a huge threat. We were defending well. A really poor first goal from our point of view changes the momentum of it. And then they have the momentum and the quality to execute really well for the second goal. So, yeah, it's an extremely disappointed group. I don't think we got what, on an individual level or as a squad we deserved from the game. But that's football. And... as much as it's a devastated dressing room at the moment, I know what the reaction will be. I believe in what the reaction will be, and I believe we'll be back fighting next week.
Indeed, Town will. Stu, it was a wet, cold afternoon at Portman Road. Storm Dara hit the country, and obviously didn't hit Suffolk as bad as other parts of the country. Anybody listening from those parts of the country, hope you're all safe and well. Stu, opening thoughts on the game. Obviously, we knew we were going to have a ding-dong battle against the Cherries, and that's what we got.
Yeah, the first thing we hoped for going into this game was a better spectacle, something more... in line with what we've become accustomed to and spoiled by at Portman Road over the last sort of 2 years. Forest and Palace were fights. They were sort of bitty, scrappy games, not helped by the referee. And we hoped that stylistically this would suit Ipswich better, a team that likes to play and attack at speed and leave gaps and similar to Ipswich, really. And we got that in the first half. It was good fun, and that lifted the crowd. The atmosphere was several notches above what it had been in midweek. And it was hard for us to keep up at times in terms of the match report and the live updates and stuff, because it was pretty breathless end-to-end action. I thought Bournemouth started the better. A whisker away from scoring when that Kirkes low cross kind of flew across the six-yard box, and I think it was Tavernier at the far post who was a whisker away from getting on the end of it. Then I thought Ipswich got a foothold and they grew and the goal was coming, and it did come through Connor Chaplin. And then Bournemouth kind of came back at Ipswich a little bit and finished the second half quite well, and Tavernier hit the post. So half-time comes, big cheer from the crowd, applauded off. We'd seen an entertaining spectacle. Ipswich, I thought, just about deserved to be in front at half-time. At that stage, all in the world was good.
Yeah, it was. But it wasn't a great first half for me. Take pictures, boys, though. Deary me. Rain. I actually jinxed it. If you watch game day, at the start of the game, I said, not bad, actually. It's a bit windy, but it's not raining. It's not as cold. And then 10 minutes later, I'm like on the camera going, yep, jinxed it, because it started pissing it down. And yeah, it was very wet, and trying to make sure my cameras and all my gear was, safely not getting destroyed by the rain. But yeah, enough about me. AJ, there was 5 changes from Kieran McKenna for this game. We saw Jack Taylor make his first start. Chaplin, Smonix comes in. Burgess comes in for Jacob Greaves. Ben Johnson and Farry Clark. Obviously, we always in the press room just getting ready for the team news to drop. And obviously, straight away, the thing you do straight away, looking at how many changes is that? It was 5.
Yeah, there were 5. And I think that was what was needed, because the Forest performance was disappointing. But I think the real frustration was how they managed the Crystal Palace match. And you got to think about kind of the mental hangover from that, but also the physical one, having played on the Tuesday night, trying to get a few fresh legs in from that 1-0 defeat, one that was hard fought, but not the best watch. So you want to have a bit more energy in there. So it is tactical, but also about rotating. And I think the balance was struck really, really well, to be perfectly honest. I mean, we'll touch on Burgess in a bit, but there's no real surprise that he was excellent. We can't really say. Well, we'll get on to that in a bit anyway. But Ben Johnson, I thought, settled in quite well, apart from maybe 1 or 2 moments, but handled himself well against Semenyo. Jack Taylor in on his first full Premier League debut, where I thought he did really, really well. And then also just started to gel with that 3 behind Liam Delap. And that was important, because I was really excited when I saw that 3 start against Nottingham Forest. And they were pretty ineffective, and that was a different kind of game, to be fair. And in this one, it worked really well. They were creating chances, obviously get the goal. So selection wise, I think there wasn't really that much to complain about. I think it worked really well against Bournemouth. It's then you look back on it in hindsight and you say, well, you wouldn't really have changed anything else. I think that all the changes were the right ones. They looked fresh starting the match, and they had the quality, obviously, to get themselves ahead. Could have been 2 as well. We had the other goal that was disallowed from the corner, that Burgess's header, with Delap kind of wrestling Kepa a little bit. I know there was a bit of a debate around that one, but I think we're probably quite unanimous in saying it was fairly ruled out.
Kieran's just kind of said on the audio just there, there's a couple of things that I'd pick him up on. I understand that he's trying to highlight all the positives from the performance, and I agree with the large bulk of what he's saying. One of the things I don't is probably the disallowed goal. I think goalkeepers do get a lot of protection these days, but when I saw the replay back, Delap's got the goalkeeper wrapped up a bit on the line, hasn't he? And I think it does stop him, impede him trying to come and claim the ball. I think that's what the foul's given for, isn't it? Rather than the Burgess kind of header over the top of the defender. So I'm not sure about that one. Bournemouth had quality. You could see that. And their passing was so incisive. Some real through the eye of the needle stuff. And they had moments where they did carve through and create chances. So you always felt, and we knew that going into the game, some of the results that Bournemouth had, some of the goals that they've scored, that was going to be the case. But You know, by and large, Ipswich sort of handled that pretty well. And yeah, we just then it got to half time, and then it was a case of right for the, that was the first time I said to Alex, if they led at half time at home this season, we had to check back through it. No, they haven't. We're going back to the Huddersfield game since that last happened. So can they hang on? We've been hearing in the last couple of games that the first goal is crucial at this level because it changes the, it gives you something to protect. And it's really hard to break down teams when they've got a goal to protect. And that was the kind of narrative after Forest and Palace. Well, Ipswich had the goal this time. Let's see how they could cope with being the team that that had something to protect. And it wasn't lacking for spirit and fight and everything like that in that second half. Maybe we'll use that as the hook to wax lyrical about Cameron Burgess, hey, because he was at the front of the queue if we're talking about fight in this game. He was absolutely immense.
Yeah, let's just do that straight away. We'll talk about Chapman's goal, but let's talk about Cameron Burgess, AJ, because what a journey. We've spoken about his journey before, but now he's stepping up to the Premier League and he's the man who was just immense. Winning every tackle, sliding in, last-ditch tackles, winning his aerial duels, got an assist. Like, I was thinking he was going to do a Michael Keane at one stage. You know, when he, obviously, the Everton goal against us, which is not a great goal to concede, but, you know, cut back in, into Chapman, boom. Trademark Connor Chapman goal. But yeah, Cameron Burgess, my friend, let us know what you think about him.
He was going to do a Michael Keane, according to Connor Chapman. I don't know if you've got that clip lined up for us in a bit, but he was. And Chapman said, I'd scream very loudly to say, cut it back for me. And thankfully, Burgess heard him. And to be able to say that you've registered an assist in the Premier League is quite a big statement. Again, in the same way that you don't want to kind of talk about Ipswich's journey kind of every single week and saying this is where they've come from, you probably don't want to do the same with Burgess, because we've spoken about this a lot, but it is a hell of a journey. It really is, from where he was, even at the time, I believe, when Kieran McKenna took over at Ipswich, he wasn't really seen in any sort of great light. And now we're talking about someone who was seen in quite a poor way in League One, being one of the top performers, definitely in the last game, but also pretty much throughout when he's played, to be perfectly honest, in the Premier League, and dealing with some of the fastest and most dangerous attackers outside of the top six, which is really, really good. So it's things like he could have had a goal from the corner. He had another one that he got onto the roof of the net. He obviously sets up the goal, but then it's everything defensively. It's the blocks, it's the headers, it's the last-ditch tackles, it's timing everything to perfection. So just brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And it's great that it's the League One contingent that's being able to have a big impact in the Premier League. It means a little bit more because we've all seen these guys progress through the ranks even when things weren't great, and now you're seeing them take on some of the best in the world and more than stand their own. And the interesting thing now, of course, for Kieran McKenna will be what's going to happen at left centre back, because he also has a £15 million option to go on that side. And I think he's probably being kept out of the team by someone from Accrington Stanley who cost,
I think,
750, something like that. Maybe.
Yeah, they were all in that sort of region. That was that sort of 750 fee around that sort of time, I believe. So, I mean, he's just, you mentioned about so many of these players having been with Ipswich in League One. You can go a little bit further and say that, and Kieran pointed this out afterwards, how many of them have actually played League Two football? I had to go back and check, and it's five of them have played in League Two. But Burgess played for Scunthorpe and Salford at that level, Jack Taylor at Barnet, Schmoddix for Colchester, Chaplin for Portsmouth, and Sam Morsey at Chesterfield. And then obviously Ali Alhamadi coming off the bench, who was playing at that level as recently as January. So, yeah, it's not just they've been on this journey from League One. We know that some of these players were bought, they dropped down a level lower than that they probably should have been in League One at the time, but they've come from a hell of a long way. Three of them played in the National League. Taylor, Burgess and Schmoddix have all had brief spells in the National League earlier in their career. So it is a reminder. I know people are probably sick of hearing it, and there's a broader debate to be had here. A reminder of just how much Ipswich Town were up against it coming into this division. it doesn't make it any easier when you're losing games in this sort of fashion. But yeah, we're going to keep having this bigger debate about, you know, what Ipswich should be achieving at this level throughout the season, I'm sure. But yeah, there is some there. Before we get on to how it all unraveled, there is some good stuff to pick out of this game for sure.
Yeah, and obviously Connor Chaplin, as you mentioned, Stu, gone on that journey as well from scoring from League Two to the Premier League. And AJ, it was a trademark Connor Chaplin finish. He got close to scoring against Forest, but Liam Delap nicked it from his toe. This time he scored, and it was an important goal in that moment. Obviously, in the end, it didn't count for anything. Well, it counts because it was a goal and everything, but he didn't go on to win. But yeah, nice moment for him, and obviously he's become a dad again.
Yeah, that was something he told us in the pre-match press conference on Friday. God, I'm mixing up all my days here. That's great news for him. He's a big family man. He talks about taking his kids swimming and stuff like that. Loves being outdoors, and spoken to a few different players about what they kind of do to distract from football, because you definitely have to, especially when you're in the Premier League and in the news all the time. And that's a big thing for him. So that was really good. Maybe that's just one of those things that gives you a bit of a boost. You know, you've had some really great news. Obviously, the first time it's been announced publicly, you've got positive vibes, and then you have something like that that falls for you. It's been waiting to fall for him for a while. He said he would have tucked it away against Forest if Delap hadn't kind of taken it off his toes. I was like, well, maybe, I guess. But I wasn't really that kind of bought into it. Having watched him finish that shot against Bournemouth yesterday, as my doorbell goes off. Sorry about that. Oh, my God. Hang on. My Ring doorbell has decided to go with...
Is it Christmas? You've got a Christmas
feel. Yeah, we
it.
Do.
Someone is at the front door.
Right, okay. That's anybody, been turned off in a yeah. bit. Don't know.
Anybody get that? Or
I really hope that never happens again. sorry about that, guys. Yeah, I don't know where I was with Connor Chapman. Anyway, brilliant finish. One that... I think that he was really lining up against Nottingham Forest, wasn't he? And he gets it this time. Celebration's brilliant. It's a fantastic moment for him. He's been asked for quite a few weeks, what's it going to be like when you score that first Premier League goal? And then finally it comes, and it just hurts, because he said at the time, it'll be brilliant, but I want it to mean something. And unfortunately, in this case, it didn't. So that's kind of the big frustration for him. But great for him to tick it off. Great for him to have that moment. And I'm sure when he gets the chance to look back on his career, it will be fantastic to say, I've scored in the top four divisions. There's not a lot of players that can say they've done that.
Shall we hear from Connor Chaplin, and then we'll find out some more positives from Stuart Watson. So let's hear what Chappers had to say.
Tough to take. Don't feel like it was justified. Yeah, it hurts a lot. Lads are gutted in the change room. I think this is a game that we felt like we could have won. I don't know the time of the first goal, but I felt like we were... I felt like we were the better side, creating the better chances. Defended really well in shape and counter-attacked really well in the second half as well. Tough to take, really tough to take.
Hard to look at the positives because there are so many from that game and the way that you played, but at least in this moment, is it difficult? Is it going to take some time?
Yeah, maybe now, maybe right now, but I know for a fact there was plenty of them. I thought we were brilliant, I think. I know it's tough to say now, it sounds silly, but we have to take so much confidence on the way that we played. They're a top Premier League side, they're a really good team, really good players, and I felt like we deserved a lot more from the game, so... Yeah, it's definitely one that there is, and I know there is so many positives. Outside noise won't delve into that too much now, and probably rightly so, and probably expect that, but I know for a fact there was so many positives in what we've done today.
Nice segue. Didn't even know that was going to work that way, but it has, Stu. So take it away, my friend. Chaplin has just said there many times, positives that some people may not talk about, but there were, until we get obviously to the negatives.
Yes, there was. I mean, we've mentioned Cameron Burgess. There are several individuals that we can pick out. Jack Taylor, I think, is someone who deserves a fair bit of praise. His first start of the season in any competitions. I don't think he even started in the Wimbledon game earlier in the season. So that tells you a lot that he's come from, as Kieran kind of pointed out afterwards, that he started the season as fifth choice central midfielder, probably behind Morsi. Luongo started the first game of the season, then Phillips and Kajusta arrive. So for him to come in and perform as well as he did, I think was a big positive. The fact that Ipswich were able to kind of go toe to toe with a club like Bournemouth, who, you know, we're having this same conversation every week, but they're an established Premier League side. This is their eighth season out of 10 in the Premier League. These are squads that have been built over several transfer windows. You can say Ipswich spent what they did in the summer, but these are clubs that have been spending around those sort of figures window upon window for a period of time. Ipswich were in the game. It felt in the second half, I always felt like Bournemouth had that quality that could happen at any moment. We'd seen glimpses of it, and it felt increasingly like Ipswich, it was getting a bit more, I don't know if the word control that I heard Kieran use there was quite right, because it felt sometimes a bit last ditch. It was all like a big sliding tackle, and that got a roar from the crowd, but a bit sort of spirited but sort of hanging on type vibe. And you could just see the battery starting to drain in several of these players, and it was getting a little bit tired. And pre-match, this isn't being smart with hindsight, when we were chatting in the press room, I did wonder, we had a conversation around, are subs going to be the difference today? Because that's the difference, I think, ultimately now, is the depth. And this is where injuries are coming into play for Ipswich as well. And also the fact that their squads just aren't as advanced and developed as some of these clubs, that Ipswich can compete to a point. And then Bournemouth brought on, I think I added up £60 million worth of substitutes. And they made their subs earlier. Kieran was in a bit of a quandary as to how long did he push the players that were on the pitch before he turned to his, let's be honest, weaker bench. He waited and waited. Bournemouth went early with their subs, and it just felt like the tide was starting to turn, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, some of the players were very leggy indeed. And it was at the 80th minute, Delap came off, and I thought, he's done well to stay on, but he did look very leggy indeed. And AJ, Bournemouth were really attacking Town's goal, and they did get that equaliser. Shall we talk about that?
Yeah. They were attacking Town's goal, but I didn't really feel, especially in the build-up to it, they weren't really knocking the door down, let's say. It didn't feel like they were really creating chance after chance to test Muric. There was the odd one. I know that across the 90, he made four saves. So, he did enough to stop a couple of goals there. But also, it didn't really feel like they were really trying to, blow Town away in those dying stages. And I guess that's where the McKenna argument on control comes in, and the legginess, as we touched upon, was probably the big issue. But it's a ball over the top to Uatara. I think Johnson at that point, lack of match minutes and coming back from an injury, meant that when that ball to Uatara came in, he tried to chase after him and just didn't have enough to quite get there. And then The moment of Muric madness is, I guess, how it will be remembered. This goal comes out, becomes evident quite quickly. He's not going to get to it. And, ball gets lifted over him by Uatara. It's going in anyway. It's Unal who kind of gets the last touch on it. Not really sure whether Burgess is that heavily involved, whether he's getting a touch there. At the end of the day, it looks like it is going to stay as an Unal goal, which is good for Burgess, because nothing should tarnish what has been a fantastic performance for him. But a really frustrating one to concede. It's the timing more than anything. I think that the Muric thing, we'll have to come on and have that debate. It's definitely a big error. I do probably think that from the position they got into, Bournemouth would have had a good chance of scoring it anyway, to be perfectly honest. But that is a whole other debate. The biggest thing for me, aside from Muric there, is just the timing. That's what hurts the most. It's the fact that it's the 87th minute. Ipswich has spent 87 of those pretty much defending for their lives and doing so really, really well. And then to have it go against them in that one moment is what really must hurt, because even though a point at that stage against Bournemouth would have been, I think, a really good result, one that quite a few fans probably would have taken beforehand, given how they played against Spurs, the fact that at that point it felt fairly definitively that the home winless run was going to continue, that was what was so sickening, given how they played before that.
And you were happy, though, AJ, at that point, because, ooh, maximum points with predictions, but obviously, you know, you didn't want that, you wanted a town win.
She said to me, and I said to him, there's still about 4 minutes left of added time at this stage. I'm not going to jump the gun just yet. And yeah, I think it took about 90 seconds of those 4 minutes for it all to go a little bit worse.
Yeah. I think, Stu, we do need to have the debate about Muric. I'll sort of let you sort of take over this. I'm now at that point. Does the big saves outweigh the bad moments? Where are you at with him?
Well, this is exactly what Burnley fans described Aaron Muric to us in a nutshell when he signed, that he'll make some outrageous stops in great quantity. He'll be good in the air and come and catch high balls and use his height, but there is ricks in him, and big ricks. You know, I remember looking at his highlights when he signed. There was a couple. He came in for the last 10 games of the season for Burnley. Last year, I think Trafford got dropped as they were battling relegation. And there were days where, you know, I think he made more saves than any other goalkeeper during that period in the team, in the whole Premier League. But also there was, I think, a goal against Brighton that he made a bit of a fudge of things. Certainly I remember the one where he cleared into Calvert-Lewin against Everton. So Ipswich knew what they were getting, and we've kind of seen that already in the first kind of third of this season, haven't we? The man of the match display at Brighton sticks in the memory. There have been lots of other good games and solid games, and they're easy to forget because that's the nature of being a goalkeeper. You make a mistake, the ball ends up in the back of the net. There are other players that are giving the ball away and having slight lapses of concentration, but it doesn't get highlighted as much. But there's no doubt about it. It's a rush of blood to the head. I don't know why he's decided to come racing off his line to collect a ball that was, you know, there wasn't danger on. And it's not the first time it's happened, is it? It's, you know, Brentford, the winning goal for Mbeumo, which is, I don't really know how we describe that one, a bit of a brain fart. He don't know why he thinks a defender's going to go and put their head on it, but he lets the ball creep past him. Man City, you kind of thought, well, give him a bit of good grace. It was his debut. He's playing with a whole new team. He's back at his former club. But he makes a couple, one, definitely one, but probably two sort of costly errors in that game as well. So it's a valid debate now that no player is undroppable, and that includes goalkeepers. And Christian Walton had a really good game against Liverpool on the opening day of the season and could feel hardly done by to have been dropped. Are we getting towards that territory now? Possibly. It feels like, you know, judging by social media and supporters, that they're keen for a change. But I think Ipswich will stand by their man. They paid their money for him. They'll see that he's been doing some good stuff. And yeah, I can't see that change happening imminently, but I don't know how you boys feel about it.
Yeah, AJ, we had this debate a little bit before, and but now it's that point where there's another mistake there. But then there's also that argument, he is also playing with a back line that's keep changing a little bit. Obviously, you know, Crystal Palace said Jacob Greaves. This time he's obviously Cameron Burgess come back in. But yeah, where are you at with it? And obviously, I've seen a stat. Is it four goals now that it's led to his errors that we've conceded? So yeah, it's sort of, as I said, they're outweighing the good and the bad. It's sort of like, ooh, it's going that way, but then it's going that way as well.
Yeah, you can flip it both ways. I think that four errors is the most that any player has made in terms of them leading to a goal. Easier for goalkeepers, though, I think it's fair to say. On the flip side, I'm gonna cut out some. I'm sorry, you're probably gonna shout at me. 1.9 goals prevented ranks him fifth in the league, which is a good place to be perfectly honest. And that's the thing. I think when he's playing well, and when he has a really good game, there are few goalkeepers that I can think of that are better than him in terms of shot stopping in the league. Genuinely, when he's on it and when he doesn't have this rush of blood to the head, I really, really think he's a good goalkeeper. And even in the games where Town have lost and it's been a goal, like Forest game, for example, thought he was good in that. And you can't do anything about the penalty, obviously, from there. He's commanding his box really well. He's catching balls.
Made a big save from Eze against Palace, didn't he, on Tuesday night?
Yeah, and these things get forgotten as well quite easily. We don't really remember all the saves apart from probably the Brighton game. That's, I'd say, the only one, but there's quite a few highlight reel saves there. It's just really the debate on whether that, as we said, gets balanced out by the mistakes that he's made. So I don't really know where I stand with him, to be perfectly honest. I want to support him and back him, and I think that people will not like that personally, I'd say, but that is how I feel, given the good stuff that he's done. And I don't think that gets the right amount of recognition because of the mistakes. On the flip side, with Christian Walton, I think for me, I mean, it's hard for me because I've hardly seen Christian Walton play, for example. And I don't necessarily think that's just a thing for me, but we have to bear in mind he's played one game in the Premier League and it was he did well. It was the first game of the season. He has not had the same step up as the rest of the team. So you're looking at other players, take Cameron Burgess, for example. He went with Ipswich from League One into the Championship, into the Premier League, and has been able to have that kind of progression. Christian Walton hasn't. He's essentially made the step up from League One into the Premier League now without playing in the Championship because he had that injury right at the start of the season.
He has obviously played in the Championship with some other teams before, though. Mm-hmm. Has sort of, you know, done that leap, but not obviously from the Championship to the Premier League. But sorry, mate, I just wanted to...
In terms of having that same linear progression as the other players in this team, the journey's not quite been the same because he hasn't played a lot of football and you have to have that freshness as a goalkeeper and also just being able to have that kind of progressive journey to the top that other players have had. So then throwing him in and saying, well, he's going to be better than Aaron Muric, is there necessarily a basis for that? You might not have the mistakes, but then do you have someone that we are convinced and sure can make the same saves that he has that has kept Ipswich in a lot of games? So there's where the balance comes for me, I think. It's a department that probably concerns me overall, the goalkeeper department. But in terms of where I am with Muric, it's really kind of a 50-50 where I want to see the positives and I can see the positives and I can understand why people can't see the positives because the negatives are there and they definitely now have cost Ipswich some points.
I think where they'll see the bigger upgrade between the two goalkeepers is the kicking and the distribution and the ball at feet is probably why they went for Muric to try and replicate what Hagi could do. And that obviously now gets brought up every time we're having this debate. Was that the one position that Ipswich didn't necessarily need to go out and spend on the summer when Faz had been in, I think, everyone's top three players last season? That situation was what it was. I wonder, I don't know for sure whether he had sort of Celtic in the back of his minds and it probably that situation didn't play out how Baz would have hoped in the summer. But, you know, we've had that debate. That situation has been on gone. He went, Muric came in. And I think we have to also remember that in the early stages of last season, there were some teething issues with Hladky as well when he first came into the team. We were having similar sort of debates around him, if you remember. And by the time we get to the end of the season, you know, Hladky's a hero and, you know, we got to break the bank to keep him and all that sort of stuff. But I'm sure we had various podcasts where we talked about, is it time to drop him and is Walton a better goalkeeper? I think for me, defences in general, goalkeepers, back fives, I like to see a bit of continuity and you have to sometimes ride out a bit of a storm. And yeah, this is another big chunk of evidence against Aaron Muric at the weekend. But as Alex says, it's easy to forget all the big saves and the good things that have happened, not just Brighton. There's been lots of other games where he's made some some big stops. I think if people will probably be surprised if you put together a kind of positive highlights reel of this season, how much good there's been. So I'm sure that Kieran McKenna will stick by his man, but yeah, it's just that it's highlighted. They're not only have they been mistakes, but they've been costly ones, and they've been at the end of games as well, which makes them hurt all the more, doesn't it?
Yeah, bet you anything, Muric will be a hero on Saturday against Wolves. He'll make an unbelievable save and we go on to win the game, or he could have another clanger and lose, but we'll see.
I tell you what, he nearly saved the one at the end. He wasn't, you know, that was like close range. I don't know if he makes the initial save or if it's a block. It all got a bit scrambly, didn't it?
But Ben Johnson, I think, maybe got the block, if I'm rightly.
But then the rebound is like close range, and you look at him, he sticks out a massive long arm and spreads himself, and you know, on another day that's like Onana, where he gets a bit lucky with the save against Delap, but he does all the right things as a goalkeeper and we'd be going, wow, what an amazing save, sort of thing. So I know a few people want his head on a spike at the moment, it feels like, sort of straight after a game, and you have to kind of put all that emotion and frustration into somebody sometimes. But in the cold light of day, I think it's probably best not to overplay it.
It's been quite an Arrow Muric week, this, hasn't it, when you think about it, where Forrest goes back to his former team, obviously Town lose, but that save he made from Murillo's header from the corner was absolutely outstanding, and I really think should be at least in the conversation for a save of the month kind of debate, which he's obviously been nominated for a couple of times so far this season. Then as the Eze one in midweek, and then obviously has the mistake mistake yesterday. So I think within a small snapshot, you've already seen what he's capable of in both sides, really. It's the sublime to the ridiculous. And I just really would love to know what goes through his head when he does rush out and have those kind of moments where he then gets beaten. Because, I don't quite understand it. At the same time, I do, as we've said, I sympathise with the fact that it's easy to sweep a lot of his really brilliant moments under the carpet, especially when he pulls one of those off and then Ipswich don't go on to get the points.
As Stu said, it's just a brain fart. Bless him. He just, has a moment. Obviously, it was a sucker punch, although someone actually commented and sort of said, it's not a sucker punch when you knew it was going to happen. And Stu, obviously, those final few moments of the game, Bournemouth were trying to find it. Obviously, both of their goals got checked for VAR, didn't they? But obviously, in the end, it went their way. And obviously, the goal did happen in the 95th minute. But another late goal, my friend.
Yeah, I feel it was coming? I look back at the sort of chances in the second half. Bournemouth had a couple. I can remember there was like a little 3-on-3 moment, and then Sam Morsy tried to shield the ball out and it got cut back, and Cliver made an absolute mess of a really good chance in the box. But in general, Ipswich, I never felt like fully in control of the game, probably had the better chances. Schmodics had a snapshot beaten away. Chaplin had a shot blocked. Jack Taylor stuck one just wide from outside the box. It was kind of bits and pieces moments. But Bournemouth, for all their quality, it didn't feel like, as Alex said, it didn't feel like they were banging the door down. You're thinking, and that's probably why there's a debate here now to had about substitutions and the timing of them. Bournemouth made a double sub on 63. They made a double sub on 74. And it was pretty clear, I would say, from the early stages of the second half that certain players were knackered. And Leon Delap was at the front of that queue. There was a moment where he turned his man on halfway line and he looked to charge away and eat up the space, and he just couldn't get away from Zabani. And Alex said Liam Delap of August, September gets away from him there. And it's no surprise. We can have this debate about a lot of players in the team, but Liam Delap missed the whole of the second half of last season with a knee injury. He's playing as a number nine regularly for the first time in his career. He's playing at the Premier League level for the first time in his career, and he's playing three games in the week for the first time in ages. Similar sort of conversation could be had around Amari Hutchinson, who really only started playing, was in the starting 11 in the second half of last season. So this is his first calendar year of properly playing men's football regularly. And those two are under undue pressure to kind of lead the line at the moment, because Ipswich weren't able to get that strength in depth that they wanted across the top end of the pitch. They're having done to them what they did to other teams last year. And, you know, the whole narrative around the promotion season was Kieran McKenna. Everyone ran themselves into the ground for 70 minutes, and then you could bring on like-for-like changes, and you can bring on Sarmiento, and you could bring on George Hurst, and you could bring on whoever across that forward line, and you would wear teams down. They would get tired, and Ipswich were fitter. Ipswich had greater depth, and eventually that pressure told. And that's what happened in reverse at the weekend. As I said, the quality that, you know, Bournemouth could bring on a David Brooks or a Philip Billing or Unau up front. Ipswich, and we always have to couch this with the greatest respect, are bringing on Ali Alhamady, who they signed from a League Two club in January. And I actually thought Ali did really well when he came on, and he won some fouls and he put himself about. But there is a difference in the type of players that Ipswich could kind of turn to in this game compared to the opposition.
Does it then prove that the Premier League and the Championship, that is that massive gap? I think we have been discussed before, as you saw last year, all the promoted teams got relegated. And it just proves it. And I've also looked, Lindelap, boys, one yellow card away from suspension. So Ali Alhamady may have to start a Premier League game, which, or then do you bring Broadhead up front, or do you put Sammy Smodic up front? That had a debate, obviously, at a time when Delap does get that extra yellow card. Hopefully he doesn't. I don't know when that is, that deadline, but yeah, he's one away, boys. What do you reckon?
Oh, yeah, an interesting one in terms of, well, I saved a little tweet on this I was going to put out. But yeah, he's on four along with Sam Morsey and Amari Hutchinson. So they've got four more games to navigate. Wolves away, Newcastle home, Arsenal away, Chelsea home. Difficult, especially for him and Morsey, although Morsey has now walked an eight-game tightrope in terms of avoiding that, which... you know, he was able to do in the Championship. I'd say doing it in the Premier League's harder one, where
he got smacked right in the face, didn't he, in the opening?
Oh, yeah, that was weird. That was bizarre. I don't really know what to make of that one, because I think a few people were a bit frustrated with that, where I kind of saw it as a bit of a, he's trying to push away. I didn't think it was necessarily cynical. It was bizarre.
Neither manager wanted to comment on that afterwards. They were both asked about it. I don't think Kieran wanted to sort of make too much of a meal of it. He said, I had eyes on play. But it was Ipswich's kickoff, wasn't it? And within a split second, it's Morsey gets kind of blocked. I think he's trying to be the blocker on, it was Zabanyi, wasn't it, I think? Was it Clivert? Okay. Yeah. And it's a bit of a kind of get off me swinging arm, which looks a bit sort of right hooky when you watch it back, and he catches him in the face. But Sam Morsey throws his arms around a fair bit in a game of football at the best of times, doesn't he? So I don't think I wouldn't be wanting to make too much of that.
No, I didn't really think so. And from there, as I said, you've got the 3-on-4 cards, and probably the biggest concern is going to be Liam Delap in that situation, because then if he misses out one of the next four, as we've said before, we're really trying to push him to get through until January now, and then try and reassess the options in January. But you then got an option of playing a striker who was playing League Two football as recently as January, as we said, or then trying to go with someone out of position who probably doesn't fit the mould. I asked Conor Chaplin that on Friday, and he said, no way am I going to be playing up front, for example. And someone like Sammy Smodic, yeah, he can be a natural striker, but he doesn't fit the mould of what you want as an Ipswich Town striker, nor does Nathan Broadhead. We had that experiment earlier this year in the kind of January bit while Town were trying to get a striker in, and it didn't work. So even for a match that's not really what you want, especially with some really tough ones coming up, Arsenal and Chelsea at the end of this year, it is really important that they navigate this booking situation, because it's not that the squad necessarily is thin, but these are three key players. If you're looking at top performers for Ipswich Town so far this season, you would definitely have Liam Delap, Amari Hutchinson, and Sam Morsey. Well, you'd probably say within the top five at least. So even having them out for a game could have a really big impact, especially if it would be more than one at a time against a high level opponent. So one that they're going to have to be really careful with.
Just to go back to the substitutions, I've seen a lot of substitutions are what it cost us. And is there a question mark over Kieran McKenna waiting so long for when it was clear to everybody that certain players were tired? Why did he wait till the 81st minute? And his argument was, we were playing well. We had the game under control. I didn't want to upset it a little bit. I don't think he'd ever, you know, he's not going to say, and basically I didn't trust the players on the bench as much as the ones that were on the pitch. But I think there's probably an element of that. I look at the bench and I think, it's all very well saying could have done something a little bit earlier, but I'm not sure what that would have looked like. Jack Clark comes on towards the end. You can argue that he can help you see out a game because he's a ball carrier and he can keep the ball and he can draw fouls. But I think his off the ball stuff still needs a bit of work. We have this conversation a lot about Nathan Broadhead last season for all the good he can do in attack. Does he contribute enough off the ball? Not for me. And I think Jack Clark's in that same conversation. I look at the winning goal for Bournemouth and Leif Davis having, you know, put in his ridiculous mileage as he does. Does he need a little bit more help from a fresh sub in front of him in Jack Clark? Yes, I think so. We spoke to Jack Clark recently. He admits this is a big adjustment to him playing a different style of football under Kieran McKenna. He's used to basically being go out on the wing, be a bit of a luxury player. You can get the ball, do what you want, try and take people on, don't worry about off the ball stuff, and he's still readjusting to that. Jens Kajusta has been really good, but I think they've got concerns about him breaking down with this knee injury that he's managing. Brentford decided not to sign him for following medical stage. This was the third game in 8 days, so that's why he dropped out of this team. You leave yourself open to accusations of taking unnecessary risks if he'd have played too much. So maybe that's why they waited a little bit. Calvin Phillips, even though he's been on the bench the last two games, clearly they don't feel he's fit because he's had an ankle injury recently. So we're coming back to squad depth again, and you can't get away from the fact that Ipswich are always going to be massively up against it this year, and they needed everything to go their way in terms of injuries, VAR, crowd, moments in games, all that sort of stuff, and certain things just are not going for them, and injuries and fitness is one at the moment. Twanzebe, probably one of their best defenders. Ogbene, I think we've kind of underestimated what a loss that he's been. We talk about being able to bring on someone that can bring on some physical qualities and freshen up the attack. He's out for the season. George Hurst as well. You look at the impact he had when he came on at Tottenham and helping kind of see that one over the line. And then various other players who are kind of semi-fit and still getting up to speed. Ben Johnson, for example, has had a couple of injury setbacks. Broadhead has not played all season, barely. So tough enough challenge as it was when you're dealing with kind of injuries and semi-fit players throughout the squad, I would say.
I know it's hindsight and everything, but I know obviously Kieran McKenna doesn't carry a defender on the bench, but maybe he should going forward, because maybe that's what we need. Maybe just, I know you're only 1-0 up and that's a dangerous scoreline, but you bring on another defender to defend. Obviously, there's Connor Townsend on the bench, but obviously, I think he got brought on against Brentford and obviously went on to lose that game, so that didn't work out. But, you know, once again, hindsight.
What would that look like? Yeah, I can. That's definitely a valid argument. But then also, then if you throw on a defender for a striker and then it's seen as kind of negative and unambitious and, you know, inviting the pressure to build sort of thing. So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. I mean, that is a broad... I had a conversation with someone in the game yesterday who was saying that he thinks Kieran McKenna needs to be a bit more pragmatic and adapt to this level. I don't know what that looks like beyond playing three out-and-out centre-halves. Is that something that could work? I don't know what you guys think.
I like the idea in a sense, and I think this is where Twanzebe is a big miss, because with him at right back, you can be so much more flexible in the game because he is the right back that can shift into a centre back and you can change that way. Whereas the right back options at the moment, Ben Johnson and Harry Clark, I would not feel comfortable being right sided centre backs in a three. I know both of them have played that role before, but consistently in the Premier League, in that kind of versatility and being able to shift in game, I wouldn't be really that keen with it. So when you're looking at the back three, I like the idea in terms of, for example, having O'Shea, Burgess and Jacob Greaves together. That would be really cool. And yes, it can come across as negative, but then look at what Crystal Palace did. They're three huge blokes at the back. And it was a setup that worked really well. And they totally nullified, well, I wouldn't say totally, but they did a really good job of nullifying Ipswich at Portman Road. And that was a system that works. And then potentially you're then looking at the argument there, that does that make more sense to have that kind of approach? There's a winning formula. There's something that you can change to limit what teams can do going forward when they've got sometimes a bit more quality than you do. Then having players like Ben Johnson and Leif Davis as the wing backs. And I do get the argument of saying you can be seen as too negative, but that won't be an argument if you start winning games and picking up points. So again, this all gets changed about what the results are. You could play Daro Shea up top, and if he started scoring goals and winning games for Ipswich, then everyone would hail it as a genius move, even if it looked absolutely ridiculous at the start. So it's hard to judge things before we actually see them, and we react to all of them when we've seen them and we see the results. But hindsight's a wonderful thing, and it's hard to say sat here right now.
The win at Tottenham, of course, comes with what looked more, I know it's fluid and flexible, but that was more of a wing-backy system, because it was, he took Connor Chaplin out and he put Ben Johnson in. So that was an attacker being sacrificed for a defender. And I know it's always been blurred lines between back three, back four for quite a while, but that was, you know, it was a proper right back at wing back that day. And it was two players in support of Delap, Schmodics and Hutchinson, rather than the usual three. And it obviously worked there at Tottenham. The argument is, if you do that at home, that's seen as a bit negative when we're chasing the first home win and you want to be attacking, and we're used to Ipswich trying to have this kind of front foot style of play. It's going to be interesting to see what the solution is going forwards. Maybe that's, but then it's not like Ipswich are losing games 4-5 goals, are they? You know, they've lost by a single goal on every occasion in the last three games. They're not conceding tons of chances. They didn't concede tons of chances. I don't know what the XG against would be across these last three matches, but I wouldn't imagine it's very high. It's a penalty at Forest. Palace didn't have tons of chances. Bournemouth didn't have tons of chances. So it seems a little bit strange that we're talking about, do they need to be a bit more pragmatic and defensive, when it's probably the scoring goals which has been the bigger issue over the last few games. So for me, it is just about the depth and the number of players that are fully fit and bang at it at the moment. That's just restricting the options a bit, and making a tough task even harder.
Yeah, January, hurry up. But obviously that's not going to be that easy either, because a lot of clubs will know we need a striker and other attacking players. But it will be another very important window, which obviously has been the case in previous seasons, hasn't it, boys? Last year, and then obviously the League One season.
It has, but I would say this is a different level now. Mm. When you're a League One club with money to play with and a big name, it's quite easy to go out and lure people to the project. In the Championship, that was a lot harder, and in the end, it went to the buyer, and Ipswich were able to go and get Kiefer Moore. But that was a really difficult deal to do. But you have the Premier League pool to kind of go to. Now Ipswich are in the Premier League, what does that look like in trying to find a player, certainly at the top end of the pitch? Striker, right wing are probably going to be sort of two areas. You're looking at maybe getting loans from clubs at the top end of the table. Those players are going to be available for a reason, because they've not been getting many match minutes. So then you've got several weeks to get them up to speed. And before you know it, you're getting really into the latter stages of the season. Or do you go and look abroad? Well, Ipswich haven't done that so far, and I don't think the kind of foreign scouting network is quite... Did get Kiusta, yeah, that's fair. But I don't know what that's going to... Yeah, I don't know what that's going to look like in January when, I'm sure there will be some ambition. We'll hear this sort of Mark Ashton soundbite again about being brave and bold but not reckless. But I'm sure they will push it to the absolute limits of PSR and do what they can do. But I don't know what that's going to look like at the moment. I don't know where, you know, Alex and I were throwing around some names on a car journey and kind of thinking, well, you know, what is the sort of, what does ambition in January look like? I don't know.
Yeah, what are those names? Come on, boys. Don't tease us. I know there's a few strikers who are not playing. Or is it, you know,
there's articles to come from this.
Yeah, okay.
But I mean, I won't go through and spoil it, but when you look at the names, a lot of what I've come through is kind of following a similar path of recruitment that we've seen for players from the Championship. So, I mean, I'll give you a couple just to tease, but like someone... The two that would make sense in terms of strikers, Lato Lath was someone that Ipswich bid for at the end of the summer, according to his agent, put in quite a significant fee. And it sounds like the only reason that one didn't really materialise was because it was too late on for Middlesbrough to get a replacement. He's now been in and out of their team, not because of his form, but because another striker at Middlesbrough is playing really, really well. And then you look at someone like him and think, sure, there's the ability there, but you're then asking him to make a step up. And as Stu says, you're then asking him to get up to speed in a hellishly difficult league, one that is considerably harder, and get used to a new teammate. And they have to get used to him. And that is hard when you're coming in and do that halfway through the season. If you're looking at potentially kind of the recruitment from a team further up, the loan market's interesting. Again, someone like Evan Ferguson, I know, gets mentioned a lot. Question marks over whether he would be available for a loan, and if he was, there would be a lot of interest from the lower ends of the Premier League table. But then again, he's also not played a lot of football, and so you're having to get him up to speed for a different reason, because he needs to be fit again and needs to get back into goal scoring form, where his minutes have been limited at Brighton. He's been told to be patient, so trying to find something that comes outside of that and also probably isn't going to necessarily be recruiting from Europe is really, really difficult, and there aren't that many options. And if you're looking at a pool of teams that will be competing for the same kind of players, you're then competing, it's not competing as we had last year with teams at the top end of the Championship, you're competing with a West Ham potentially, or an Everton, or a Crystal Palace, who can say, well, we're probably not going down, to be honest, because we've been in this league for X amount of years and we can probably offer you more wages, and hopefully in a few years we can offer you European football, something like that. That's why it's going to be so much more competitive.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting window, boys, to get yourself ready and geared up. One name I'm actually looking at, he hasn't played that many games yet, Callum Wilson at Newcastle, obviously a veteran striker.
Just come back from injury, isn't he, I think?
So once again, got to get up to speed. He's only played, I think, 4 games this year, but, you know, he's got experience. Just a name I want to just chuck out there. But, okay. Yeah, we'll obviously bring you different articles, ladies and gentlemen, and let us know in the comments any players you'd like to see Town target in January. All right, then, boys. Any other business from the game, or shall we move on? Obviously, a week on the training ground for Kieran McKenna's men.
Not on the game itself. I mean, we haven't touched upon the winner, but I thought it was a really well-worked winner. We talked about being an error for the equaliser. That's really what changes the momentum. Does the winner come if the equaliser doesn't go in? Possibly not, but, you know, I thought that was a really good goal from a Bournemouth perspective, rather than being poor from Ipswich's. No, it's just sort of a bigger picture type conversation, really, isn't it? I've now seen a lot. And I'm sure it is kind of raw emotion, but, you know, and again, it's social media, so I don't want to put too much emphasis on it, because I think there is a lot of fair, reason-minded people that don't necessarily take to the internet to air their views. But a lot of stuff like, well, we didn't do enough in the summer, there wasn't enough ambition. Really, I don't like Ipswich spent £100 million on 12 players. There was a debate at the time whether that was too much and whether there was, you know, that was disrupting the spirit of the squad. So that was a really tough balancing act for Ipswich back in the summer. I think they got it just about right. They went sort of half and half with the squad that got up, but they did also recognise they needed to try and make upgrades, and they spent well. I think only Brighton were the highest net spenders over the summer transfer window. So I don't think any accusations of didn't do enough back in the summer are fair, if I'm honest. Is Kieran McKenna doing enough within games? Are Ipswich playing well enough? Do we need to expect more? I think that's probably a little bit unfair. I think given all the circumstances of all the injuries and semi-fit players and everything that I've mentioned, for Ipswich to have been really competitive in pretty much every game, you can count, what, we're talking Everton, West Ham, Palace, as being real sort of disappointing flat displays. But they've been banging in every game. Even this last week, they've been in the three games. I do think the team has learnt lessons along the way. I think we've seen improvements from the first game through to this game, both as a team, as individuals. And we said it at the start, we've waited a long old time to get back in the Premier League. Let's not kind of go, be all defeatist about it, can't wait to get back into the Championship. You have to try. You really do have to try and kind of enjoy this moment for what it is, and feel a sense of pride in some of these players. There will come a time when Wes Burns and Connor Chaplin and Sam Morsy and Cameron Burgess will eventually fade from the picture at Ipswich Town. Those water levels will rise and they'll go. And that will feel really sad when they move on because of what they've done to this club and the position that they've put them in. And they're here now. So let's enjoy them while they're here. They might be really pushing themselves to their absolute limit. Some of them might be trying to push themselves beyond their limits at the moment. But as we saw with Cameron Burgess's performance at the weekend, they can do it. And that is something to be proud of. And we have to try and take something from that, even when the results have been disappointing.
Yeah, very much so. And AJ, I think once again, it is because it's Portman Road. We lost at Portman Road because obviously we haven't yet won. We haven't got our 3 points at the stadium yet, and obviously home form, we knew when we go into the season, we knew we had to get points at home, and sadly we're not getting as many as we were hoping, and we're still looking for that first win at home.
Yeah, I think it's that. I think it's the manner of it. I think if you'd said to someone before the game, look, we're going to lose 2-1 to Bournemouth, there would have been disappointment, of course, but I think there would have been a fair chunk of people that would have said, okay, look, at the end of the day, this is a side that have just gone and beaten Spurs, they've beaten City, they've beaten Arsenal, they're a good team. It is disappointing, but they are a really strong team. And no one's really saying that because of the fact that it all unraveled in the way it did. And I think that's one side of it. And I think the other side to look at, and it's hard, and I get it, is the fact that it's not over at all. This is still a side that after 15 games, and no Wolves have won in hand, have a game in hand, they've got the same number of points as Wolves. They are 4 behind Crystal Palace, and I know that feels like a big gap for a team that has only won once this season, but everything can change in such a short space of time. This week has been pretty damaging, but it's been damaging to the extent that it's totally changed the mindset from where we were post-Man United. And I know that there will be anxiety going into games, well, definitely post-Wolves in terms of Newcastle, in terms of Arsenal, in terms of Chelsea, and Fulham and Brighton and Man City and Liverpool. That is a really tough run. But as I said before, this is a team that can surprise you from out of nowhere. That none of us expect them to go win at Spurs, for example, and they went and did that. And yeah, I just think that things can change quickly. We don't know what's going to happen in January as well, and all it would take could be another week like this where you have the opposite and everything goes for you and suddenly we're in a much better position and we're back into the stage of saying Ipswich are the likeliest of the three promoted teams to stay up, and that you've got teams like Everton and Palace and Wolves who are starting to sweat. Things can change so quickly, and I hope that now with time and going into what is a huge game against Wolves this weekend, people will realise that. I totally understand that, especially in the aftermath of yesterday, you're not really going to have that. And maybe it will take time, but there's still so many games to play for. We're not even halfway through. I know in the same way of saying, remember where you're coming from, people are probably sick to death of hearing there's lots of games to play for, because we have played 15 games and that is a lot. But there's still a lot there.
Ipswich weren't meant to be here this early. They're well ahead of schedule. And I think we do forget that last year it was Ipswich are the major underdogs. They've got no right, having just come up from League One, to be competing alongside Leeds and Southampton and Leicester. And they got promoted ahead of Leeds last year. And we went into those games against Leicester and Southampton with it being major underdogs. And that was the kind of, that underdog spirit is what kind of carried Ipswich through in that promotion race at the end. And it's amazing that within the space of a few months, that mindset flipped from being major underdogs against Leicester and Southampton to being, well, we've got to beat Leicester and Southampton. Leicester were in Europe not so long ago. Southampton, who had a decade in the Championship, and they are supposedly the two weakest links that Ipswich, two of the three clubs that Ipswich are trying to finish above, and underestimating the likes of Everton and Palace. As I said, Palace had five England-capped players in their squad the other night. Everton had 2,000-plus Premier League starts amongst them. Ipswich have got a few dozen amongst a couple of players. I know people are bored of hearing it, and I know people might think it's a bit defeatist, but it's facts, it's reality. And yet, amongst all of that, with VAR going against them, with injuries going against them, they are competing and they are in games. And I think there is still lots of things in the performances to be proud of. I look back at Sheffield United's results and Burnley's results last season. They were getting done five, sixes, eights at times in some of their results. It's not happening with Ipswich, and it probably should be happening given all the circumstances, but it's not. And I know that feels like maybe people go, that's clutching at straws, and a defeat's a defeat, and it hurts, especially when it comes late. But I am mindful of where this club's at. It's ahead of schedule. It's not really meant to be here. And, you know, the reality is they may well come up short this season and go back down. But you bank the money and the club's in a far better place. It's got some sellable assets, some good young players. The stadium's getting the TLC it deserves. And that I think that's where I'm at the moment with it all. But we'll see what the winter brings, won't we? And how we're all feeling about it in a few games' time. But it's been a tough week. But I do think we need to be mindful of the bigger stuff.
That's why people tell me that we are a very balanced and rational four on this podcast, and I think that's why people do listen to us. And I hope you've enjoyed that little. We're gonna draw a line now on the game. It's done. It's happened. Town lost, and obviously, hopefully, they can bounce back against Wolves. Shall we quickly talk about the Premier League as a whole, boys? Because there were some big results. Obviously, there was no Merseyside derby, Stu, because Storm Dara hit Everton Liverpool, so that game got postponed. But there was some obviously big score lines. Brentford keep scoring goals, don't they? They beat Newcastle 4-2. Man United, Ruben Amorim is, lost again, 3-2. Nottingham Forest, once again, it proves. I know Man United not the team. They are on the pass, but still a very good point. I think Forest's first win at Old Trafford in, almost 30 years. So all those records are getting smashed. Spurs, obviously, lost against Chelsea. What other scores were they? I'm just chucking out all the score lines now. Brighton, Leicester, obviously, got a draw against Brighton, scoring two late goals. Rude Van Nistelrooy has had a very good start as Fox's manager, hasn't he, Stu?
Yeah, that was one that we came in from the game yesterday and then saw that Leicester had scored twice late on just to rub salt in the wounds. So you mentioned like Forest beating Man United. That sort of middle pack have really gone for it in the summer. I saw a stat that said this is the first time that the sort of the middle tier of clubs in the Premier League outspent the so-called Big Six back in the summer. And there are clubs like Brighton and Bournemouth and Fulham and Forest and others all really sort of showing ambition to kind of break their way into the top bit. So I think there is that gap between top end Championship and bottom end Premier League is or certainly to mid Premier League is getting bigger and bigger. Yeah, it is what it is, boys, to use a tired old cliche. I hoped going into the season that I thought it might go down to the wire and Ipswich might be able to use all their superpowers of togetherness and spirit and the manager and all of that stuff to take it, hopefully, sort of just stay in there and take it right to the final few games, and that they would get better over time. But would time run out at the moment? It feels like time's against them. It does feel now we're over a third of the way through the season and things, a few sliding doors moments that we'll end up looking back on. It does feel like it's heading that way and it's not meant to be. But as Alex says, things can change very quickly in football. How long ago was the Spurs game? Not that long ago. How were we all feeling then? So
a month.
Yeah. So things can change. We'll see.
I think this evening's going to be interesting, isn't it? I think that this could be quite a defining part in the relegation battle. I think that West Ham will end up being clear of it in the end, just because I can't see a team with their quality in the bottom three, to be perfectly honest. But from a Wolves perspective, it will be quite interesting. Obviously, all the Mikel Antonio stuff that's happened with West Ham, I'm sure we all send our thoughts with him, because that sounded and looked horrible. But it'll be an interesting atmosphere at West Ham. It was originally a game that I know that their fans wanted to boycott, and it's kind of been seen as a last chance saloon for Lopetegui, and it'll be the same for O'Neill. If O'Neill loses this one tonight, I don't see a world in which he's in charge to face Ipswich. So that's then another twist potentially coming into it, and that game this weekend becomes huge if Wolves were to lose in London tonight, because that'll be two teams on the same amount of points. So this will be a pretty significant evening, I'd say. But again, we're looking at a mini league here, aren't we? Which at the moment, I know I said West Ham, I think we'll get out of it, but it is West Ham and down. Look, things can change, but I will say one thing right now, and hopefully it doesn't change. At least we're not Southampton.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I want to quickly obviously mention what happened yesterday as well. Simon Milton, obviously the former Town legend, obviously sadly was unwell during the game. And thankfully, he's now stable and in good spirits. The club have actually put out a message and a statement from Simon Milton. And I'm just going to read it out quickly now. I just want to take a moment to express my heartfelt thanks for all the unwavering love and support I've received from everyone. Your messages, thoughts and prayers have meant the world to me. Thank you to the first responders for their swift and professional help. I'm incredibly grateful for their quick actions in such a difficult situation. I'm now home and resting, and while I deeply appreciate all your kind words, please understand that I'm unable to respond to everyone, as there are hundreds of messages coming in. Right now, I'm sending some much-needed quality time with my family, and I kindly ask that you respect our privacy during this time. I look forward to seeing you all back at Portland Road very soon. Lots of love, Simon Milton. But yeah, that was happening during the game. And yeah, Stuart just puts it in perspective. And yeah, great to see that Simon is back at home and is, you know, on a speedy recovery, hopefully.
Yeah, sure does put it into perspective. I saw Simon in the stairwell just a minute or so before kickoff at the weekend. Simon has been a big help to me. Personally, over the last year, obviously working on Jason Dizell's book, Simon was an incredible friend to Jason during his difficult moments. He was an incredible help to me, sort of putting the book together and doing the launch night and everything. He's one of the good guys, and he's a fantastic asset to Ipswich Town with everything that he does on match day. And yeah, it's scary when, you know, people you know that take a turn like he did and fell unwell at the weekend. Really relieved that he's stable and back home and feeling well, and hopefully catch up with you soon, Milts, and wish you a speedy recovery, pal.
Indeed, yeah. Obviously a great club ambassador for Ipswich Town. I know he has that link with the former players as well, so if any former player wants to come back to the club, he's the sort of guy who sorts it out. So yeah, speedy recovery, Milts. AJ, should we segue on to EPL quickly? We're going to record a long overdue pod because it's been a while because of the midweek games and stuff. I had a shitter, to be honest. I did a wild card and I regret doing that because I got 34 points and the average was 43, so I've had a mare. So Ipswich Town haven't cheered me up, and my EPL team hasn't cheered me up either.
You got 34?
Yeah, not good.
I captained Palmer for 36.
You son of a bitch.
Sorry. I had what I thought was going to be an absolute disaster of a week. And then as I was leaving, I think it was literally as I was leaving Portman Road yesterday, I saw Palmer score again. And I was just as I said goodbye to you in the little photographer's room. And I think walking out, I saw he scored again. And that has saved me to the tune of 4 points above average on 47. I'm 40th in the league, which, given how badly that could have gone, I'll take, to be perfectly honest. And yeah, hoping for better this coming weekend, that's for sure. But two to play. We've got two Wolves players this evening, which is not great, because I'd ideally like Wolves probably to not win. But yeah, if they do, I'll just hope it's probably like a Cunha hat-trick or something.
Yeah, or if, you know, you could score a hat-trick and still lose. So
yeah,
you know,
that'd be all right. But then I'd probably be on negative points for Ait Nouri as well. So I can't really win it.
True. Okay, maybe can you just score one goal and then, you know.
Ait Nouri assist. 2-1 defeat. Yeah, that'll do. Yeah,
take that. Stu, how are you getting on? Are you, you're not giving up yet, have you?
I captained Ollie Watkins at home against Southampton and he was on the bench. So that wasn't ideal.
No, yeah, I actually had two Bournemouth players in my team, boys, which I know, get the pitchforks out on Roscoe. Both of them did do anything for me, so in a way, it's, you know, yeah, my bad. But yeah, we'll record Epi Hour as we mentioned, and obviously the next time you listen to a flagship show, it will be a special KOA 500. We're putting together an episode. Stu, AJ, Heathy will be there, obviously, and we could have some special guests. I won't confirm them just yet, just in case there's any late cancellations. But yeah, we'll be recording that. That should be with you potentially on Wednesday or maybe Thursday. We'll let you know. But yeah, KOA 500, looking back at the key moments during the years. I actually listened back to you and Andy's first ever podcast. That was very interesting. Although still had the same chemistry, which was very nice. But can you remember that? I think it was after the Hull City game.
We used to just record it on our phone, I think, didn't we? Yeah. Back in the office, just two people. Was it after Hull, was it? When was
it? Yeah. I think, obviously, we used to record a lot. I was at Sleeping Giants, I think, some Insights. Obviously, Chris Brammer, formerly of this parish as well. You recorded that with him. I think there was someone else, didn't there? Edward Crosswaite?
Ed Crosswaite, yeah.
Yeah.
He hosted for a while, yeah.
Yeah, so there's obviously previous episodes before Kings of Anglia, but that was the first ever one where it's like episode one, Kings of Anglia after the Hull City game, which we probably lost because that was obviously in the championship. I think Mick McCarthy was still in charge, actually. That must have been, yeah. Because I think, yeah, Mick McCarthy was still in charge, but maybe gone potentially soon after that. But yeah, KOA 500, looking forward to it, boys. Any other business, though, from you, Stu? Anything else? You're going to be at the AGM tonight?
Yeah, yes, AGM at Portman Road later on with Kieran McKenna and Mark Ashton on the Q&A panel. So I'll be doing some live updates from that on the website. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, check it out. AJ, anything else from you? As we said, we'll record an FPL pod. That'll be out tomorrow to discuss my failures and the last... Actually, you know what? I hadn't had a bad like week as a whole in terms, because obviously it's been three game weeks, but obviously this week, anyway. But yeah, any other business?
Sorry about my doorbell going off on Alexa with some sort of weird elves singing Carol of the Bells. Yeah, I need to remember to unplug that for future pods, just in case that comes back. Of all times to come, when I was talking during Chaplin scoring in each tier, like some sort of really massive moment to then be serenaded by a bunch of elves on my Alexa was not ideal.
That's fine. It's fine. That's what it's all about. We're live as we record this, not obviously when you're listening, but I hope you've enjoyed the latest Kings of Anglia podcast. As I said, we'll be back with bumper podcasts this week, so check them out when they go out. Still looking for a sponsor, by the way, so get in contact at mark.heath@newsquest.co.uk. Newsquest.co.uk if you want to get your brand, your business involved with the podcast, get heard by millions and millions of people, not each episode, but as a whole, we've had millions of hits and all that sort of stuff. Follow us on Kings of Anglia on all the socials and check out everything online as well. And we'll see you next time. Bye bye for now.